Well, it's that monthly time where you learn even more about how you are being poisoned by food. And it's a real sad litany of material that Misha Popoff is able to present so we can have hard data behind it. He's a former USDA organic food inspector. He knows what he's talking about. And there's a war on food going on, the likes of which I've not seen. Have you noticed, Misha, first of all, welcome back.
Yeah, good to be here, Jeff. Yeah.
Have you noticed how many recalls there have been in the last several months of food items? I have never in my life seen more recalls. The FDA is saying that the warning levels of this food, that brand, of whatever product it is, have been raised to the highest, most dangerous level, and don't eat any of these products. It's obviously being contrived to a significant degree. At least that's how I see it. Your thoughts?
Yes. How many months have we been covering these outlandish recalls? Are we supposed to believe that through the amalgamation of the food industry, you know, General Mills, Heinz, they bought everyone, all the little guys out. And by little guys, I mean, you know, below $1 billion revenue in a year. That's a small guy gets bought out by the big guy that's multi-billion. Are we supposed to believe that they're lax on their food safety protocols? It doesn't make sense. And this ties into our new president. And he's going after with DOGE all this. I mean, it's great. I'm not going to argue at all. All this overspending and obvious money laundering. But I have yet to hear him crack down on the food industry. I think it's still an ongoing scam. And I think Trump is blind to it. Like, he hasn't appointed, you know, he got Cash Patel at the FBI. And the joke with Cash Patel, it's not a joke, really, but it sort of conveys the seriousness of his appointment. It's Cash has a gun and a badge. So this, you know, this is how they're going to put fear into the hearts of the people in Washington who are scamming us. Yeah, but where's that guy? Oh, yeah, and then we have Robert Kennedy Jr. for health. Great, great. This is all great. And clamping down on the money going for, you know, transgendered drama productions.
Oh, there have been a lot of – they're throwing us cookies. Come on, these are cookies. Lots of cookies.
Yes, exactly. And where is – okay, so the closest thing we're going to get so far, a month in, is RFK Jr. on health. But what about the FDA and the EPA and the USDA? And that brings us to food. And I think it's just a huge blind spot for Trump. It could be because it's not sexy enough. You know, it's a great headline.
And yet without food, the planet disappears. It's that important.
Yeah, who cares how many transgender drama productions are going on overseas? Well, we do care, again. We do care, but yeah, I think you've hit upon it. What I'm starting to see now, like, again, I asked Jeff, how many months have we opened the show with these ridiculous food recalls? And they're just going on and on and on.
Here's another one. I just found another one. Get this.
Yeah.
This is from the Daily Mail. Today, urgent recall on popular breakfast item called Berry Buddies, berries and pancakes. Second brand name, over deadly allergens. Come on.
Oh.
Berry Buddies and berries and pancakes over deadly allergens. This is all contrived. These things have been around here forever. You eat them and nothing happens.
Yeah. Pancake. A pancake. I mean, the thing wasn't even running around on two or four legs before it became a pancake, right? So it's really hard. These recalls are hardest to imagine when it's, like I say, not meat, when it's not meat. What's going on? In the organic industry, years ago, there were problems with not fully composted manure being applied to organic crops. That has been it's been cleaned up. What's going on in the conventional industry? They don't use manure. Of course, for products not intended for human consumption, they will use municipal sewage, and that ties into one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight.
Yeah,
briefly.
Don't forget, Don't forget what they're doing to corpses now. They're turning them into plant fertilizer. It's not a joke. Not in every state, but they're doing it. It's been okay. Here's the explanation as to why these two products, Berry Buddies and Berries and Pancakes, are being recalled. Nature Ripe Value, that's the name of the company, added freshly or has voluntarily recalled its blah, 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 Berry Buddies and Berries and Pancakes because they contain wheat and eggs that were not mentioned on the label. That's it.
Pancakes.
No evidence of any food or toxicity. Never mind, there's a lot of toxicity in there, in most every commercially produced food. Talking about glyphosate and going down the list, but this is because they contain USDA certified, FDA certified wheat and eggs that just weren't mentioned on the label. What the hell?
Yeah, no, anyway. There have been recalls linked to allergies when, say, someone's making a chocolate bar and in the same factory they make a different chocolate bar that has nuts in it, and then they didn't do the clean down before they started the Mars bars and have nuts. So Mars bar, they made to deal with that, like about 20 years ago, Mars bar made a whole factory just to make Mars bars so they wouldn't have to deal with potential cross-contamination, right? Because you got the old Henry bar and the Payday bar packed with peanuts. Well, those don't even, the trucks don't even drive by the Mars bar factory. That's all. But isn't this ridiculous, Jeff? First of all, no one had nut allergies when you and I were kids. That's been created by
Never heard of it. Heard of it. Nope.
But here we are with a perfectly normal ingredient like flour from wheat, and you shouldn't eat too much of it, that's true, but what for some minute percentage of the population that has gluten intolerance, they failed to put a warning on the label, I guess. I mean, surely the ingredient list still included wheat and eggs. Sure, didn't it? I don't know.
Let me ask you this. I have a kind of a pet theory that gluten intolerance is actually a reaction to glyphosate. Because I don't know that gluten intolerance was around before glyphosate. Forced ripened wheat?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the gluten intolerance that people are thinking they're reacting to. Yeah. But it's not gluten intolerance. It's glyphosate intolerance.
Correct.
Is that possible?
I'll tell you why you definitely could be on to something. So you got oats and barley. That's your feed ration for dairy cows. They will not desiccate those crops, because if you feed a desiccated crop to a dairy cow, she could abort her fetus. And a bunch of other health. So dairy cows are treated better than you and I. Now, they never use wheat for the feed ration for dairy cows. There is such a thing as feed wheat. It's basically wheat that didn't make the grade for baking. And feed wheat, it generally goes to pigs and chickens. Dairy cows, to my knowledge, are exclusively fed mainly oats, but sometimes barley. And for those crops, they will not desiccate them. So wheat being like a standard, like when it comes to your cereal crops, barley, wheat, and oats, probably 90% is wheat. That's what's grown in Canada and the U.S. That's where the money is. As we used to say when I was growing up, wheat is king. That's where your money is. And you might in your rotation stick barley in for 1 year, but you're going to have 3 years of wheat because that's where the money is. It's like hard currency. You know, the American dollar compared to say the Venezuelan peso or something. Wheat is king. So, yeah, Jeff, I'll say this. Even if there's some barley and oats intended for human consumption, it's less likely to be sprayed. However, with that said, oatmeal, like your good old standard Quaker oats, you know, with that that religious guy on the label. I guess he was a Quaker. That's why they call it Quaker oats. Nixon was a Quaker, by the way, President Nixon. But in any case, that too is being desiccated. But they will be there will be quality control, because I guarantee some oats that were desiccated will never make it to the dairy farms. Uh-huh. It might go to chickens and pigs, but because they don't have to worry about chickens giving birth to the next generation of chickens. But on a dairy farm, you need your cows have to always be pregnant. Always. They get a couple or 3 months off, and then they're pregnant again, and that's how you get milk. And it's also how you get your next generation of calves. But yeah, Jeff. I'd like to have somebody do some
research. Let's go back and find out when gluten intolerance became an item, and find out when glyphosate began to be used as a forced ripener. I'm curious.
I would say that gluten was already sort of a problem, like 30, 40 years ago. I remember seeing gluten-free bread at the bakery, and I thought, well, what the hell is that? But no, I would say now it has risen to the point where, you know, you'd have something, millions of people in America would say they are gluten
and that could easily be triggered by glyphosate. It could be.
Yes.
It could be part of the gluten issue. Got it.
Yeah. The other thing is, remember, glyphosate, what it's doing is attacking the microbiome in your gut. And all of us, all humans, have trouble digesting gluten, because they've overbred it. They didn't GMO it. It's not genetically modified. In fact, that really coincides. That's when they really started desiccating crops, is when Monsanto planned to bring out GMO wheat, Roundup Ready wheat. It failed. There was so much pushback. They just shelved it. That's like 25 years ago now. They just gave up. And, oh, no problem. Monsanto, now Bayer Crop Science, they're probably making more money selling the glyphosate to desiccate or force ripen the wheat than they would have had they gone ahead with their plan to bring out a GMO wheat. And that's really a coincidence there, I would say, in the timeline.
Yeah, okay. All right, very good. So let's move on. You've got some really interesting things to push around the table. Let's go ahead.
Jeff, so you mentioned that they're using liquefied corpses of humans for fertilizer.
No joke, so, friends. True story.
No joke. We've talked about it before. You're absolutely right. You said it's in about half of the states. See, when Monsanto brought out their technologies, they just went to the USDA and the FDA, and they had one stop in Washington, and they paid off the right politicians, and, you know, Bob's your uncle, as the Brits say. They got these things approved. Liquid cremation, also called green cremation or smart cremation. And it's none of these things, because it's not cremation. They're liquefying the corpse. So the technical terms are aquamation or resomation. I know what aquamation means. It's they're turning you into an aquified liquid. I don't know what resomation means. These are, a minute ago, just in this conversation this evening, I pointed out you're not allowed to use municipal sewage sludge on a crop intended for human consumption. You are allowed to use great-grandma, her corpse, can go on to a crop.
How can this be? How can this be? It's just crazy.
Yeah. But as I was mentioning, they have to go state by state. So last I checked, it was about 26 of the 50 states have approved it. So they have to really, you know, put on their running shoes and get out there and press the flesh in each state to get this approved. But I can tell you, Jeff, it is approved here in Texas. See, we bought our house. There was an old couple living here, and we still get mail for them every now and then. They're long gone. I don't even think they're alive anymore. They were in their 80s when we bought the house 10 years ago. So anyway, and this comes in the mail. Smart creation for Royce City residents. That's our nearest town. Free seminar and meal. You get a meal included. And they're really subtle about this. They want to talk to you about the, you know, the Social Security and veterans benefits, you know, they're, right. they're going to help you with all the paperwork and plan now. So your surviving relatives don't have the burden of arranging the funeral. And where does it go here? Oh, yes. And then it comes down to smart creation. I keep saying that. Smart cremation promise advantages. The promise advantages. But they're offering this free meal. I mean, I just started laughing. You can have a chopped beef sandwich or a half slab of ribs if you go to this conference. And they're going to sign you up. You're not going to, it's like a timeshare. You're not going to leave there unless you've signed up and basically prepaid for your funeral and cremation. But what the point is, they're really pushing, because it's about half the price, Jeff. If you cremate with, you know, flames, I don't know, it's like $3,500 or $2,500, they'll do this for like $1,000. They'll liquefy your corpse. And you get a free meal, Jeff. You get, so if you come with your wife, you both get a free meal.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah. So that arrived in our mail, and I just thought to myself, wow, it's been a while since Jeff and I talked about smart cremation. They're still using the word cremation. I don't, like, doesn't that mean the corpse is incinerated? Anyway. Yeah.
Well, it used to. It certainly used to. They got so many things, so many games they're playing all the time. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And it's, Jeff, it's right out of, I think it's Brave New World, Aldous Huxley's book, where they, in his book, though, it's the bodies are cremated, and then the smoke going up the chimney, there's scrubbers on it, and they pull out the phosphorus and the nitrogen from. That's how it works, if anyone's wondering. And he actually wrote two books. His more famous one only touches upon that briefly. The previous novel, I can't remember the name of it, it goes into great detail about pulling the phosphorus and nitrogen out of incinerated corpses. So they're doing it. It came true. Aldous Huxley knocks one out of the park again.
Wow. What a scene. You know, I came across a 1930s little advertisement. It was kind of like a little, you know, you get an ink pad with a sticker and you, or a rubber stamp, and you'd put the rubber stamp on the ink, then you'd stamp it on a piece of white paper, and it'd make an image, you know, whatever. And this one image I saw was of a guy in a dark suit, black suit, with a white tie and a coat, mustache. I'll never forget it. And he had short black hair. This is 1930s. And he, there was a quote above it. It said, "Stop poisoning your body with food."
Mm.
1930, wake up for people.
Yeah. And, you know, we think we're so advanced. People were healthier back then.
No,
all there is
way,
to it. There was no obesity. What was that?
Say way healthier. And now what are we? You can't go through life eating commercially prepared food with 50 different ingredients and chemicals and compounds in it that shouldn't be there. They don't need to be there. What are they doing? They're trying to create business for the American Medical Association. I don't know what else to think.
Yeah, if you go to like Costco and Walmart, the prepared food sections, either in the frozen foods or in the chilled aisle.
That's right.
It's not
That's
frozen,
right.
it's chilled. But then even the fresh frozen, or fresh not frozen dinners, you can buy them hot. And that business is booming. You got moms and dads both working, coming home at 6:30 or 7, and they're just buying ready-made meals. There's so many commercials on YouTube now for ready-made meals. Just open the plastic bag and pour it into the pan, and it's like
you don't even really have to chew it anymore. They'll do that for you next. Watch.
It's really reaching monumental proportions here. Yeah. I think there was a time when there was no such thing as prepared meals. And then, of course, in the, I guess it was the 50s, Jeff, they had the TV dinner. Stouffer's brought out the TV dinner, and that was a big leap forward for prepared foods. But there was premise.
I had TV dinners in the 60s, I remember. And actually, they were pretty good. They had quality food products in the 50s and 60s, I'm sure. They were good. They were frozen and aluminum foil covering them, as I remember. And they'd put them in the oven for 35 minutes, and then you'd have a piping hot, generally high-quality meal. They weren't yeah. bad. Now, yeah. I wouldn't touch one with a broom. No way.
No. No, and now they're in a plastic container, so they're supposed to go in the microwave.
Oh, that's yeah. even worse. Yeah, you put yeah. that in the microwave. No, very interesting.
But a bit of good news if you want it, Jeff. I looked into Meaty. Remember Meaty?
Okay. Yeah, now Meaty, M-E-A-T-I, yeah. Meaty, yeah. is a meat substitute made from the roots of a strain of mushrooms. I bought one. It's just called cutlets, classic cutlets, I think. And it was not bad. Not bad at all. I tasted good. I don't know that the mushrooms were bad. I don't know. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you found out. What do you have?
Yeah. Well, what I found out is, and I was a little bit disappointed, they are going to get rid of the chickpeas. I don't know why.
Chickpeas?
Yeah, the chickpeas, which I suspected came from Saskatchewan. That's where I know we grow a lot of them. So I don't know why. Currently, it's 95% mycelium, which is the mushroom root. Yeah. And then a bunch, you know, you got some salt in there and what have you, and some binding agent. The other 5%, of the other 5%, the majority of that is still chickpeas. And for some reason, they said they're going to phase out the chickpeas and basically go to 100% mycelium, the mushroom. So that's interesting.
Hold on. I've got an idea. Yeah. Is it now? I can't remember. It's chickpea or another pea. One or the other is heavily laced with glyphosate. Which one is it? There's two of them. There's chickpea and another pea, and I can never get them straight.
Well,
something called a pea. There's another one. Maybe they took it out because people were bitching about chickpeas and glyphosate. I don't know. But that's a guess.
It could be. But good news, no soy. So that's good.
That's very good news. Yeah.
Yeah. And no, no gluten. So there's no wheat either.
What's wrong with going to 100% mycelium then? Why even have chickpeas in there?
Yeah, so I wasn't clear, and they promised, well, they're busy right now, they said, and they're going to get back to me. And I did pose to them, well, if you're worried about the chickpeas, because they're not organic, I said, you can source organic chickpeas, even if the product itself, the meaty product, isn't organic, you know, because it's only 5%. So even if they had to pay double for the chickpeas, it wouldn't be a big deal. But no, they said, actually, we're going to phase out the chickpeas and basically go with 100% mushroom root, mycelium. So very interesting.
I don't have a problem with that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, because it's already 95%.
I don't think you'd be able to tell the difference.
No, I think they seem to know what they're doing there. They're really taking off. So I haven't tried it yet because I'm hoping to get a freebie out of them. We'll see how it works. I guess I could just go buy some. But I did communicate with them after we spoke last time. Very, very
good.
Interesting.
Good. Well, how did they seem to you as people?
Yeah, very responsive, but no phone calls yet. But, yeah, I started with the general info email and then got to someone in marketing. Because, really, that's what organic is. That's where I was sort of batting back and forth in the communication, you know, are the chickpeas, are they sprayed? I didn't mention glyphosate or desiccation because that's like a technical stuff. Didn't get that far. But yeah, I thought perhaps they were, that
when they said they're getting rid of it, I thought that might be why. But yeah, remember organic, it's under the Agricultural Marketing Service of the USDA. It's not under their science branch or their testing branch or their, what is the other one? Environmental toxicity. These are all branches of the USDA. No, no, no. They put organics under marketing. So yeah, I ended up speaking with a marketing or communicating with a marketing person in the media. Very receptive. Very receptive.
Well, I'm interested in this chickpea thing. I'm sorry, I can't remember which. It was okay. I got it. Wait. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was garbanzo beans. I knew it was a bean, and I think it was garbanzo because that's the one that is in hummus. I think it was garbanzo beans and glyphosate. I'll look. You keep talking. I'll look.
Yeah. Yeah. And then see, any crop that isn't Roundup ready can be desiccated. The reason wheat is so and oats are so predominantly desiccated is because, like I said, wheat will take up the majority of the cereal crop acreage in America, with oats being second, and then barley will be third. And no one cares about barley. And in fact, you can't desiccate it if it's going to be used for malting for barley. For malting barley, or as I said, for feed for dairy cows. So they're probably just going to leave them alone. But as to which bean crop or chickpea crop, any of them could theoretically be sprayed. It's just that it won't be across from coast to coast like it is with wheat. The exception with wheat will be when a corporate farmer or the last of the family farmers goes out and looks at his wheat crop in the fall and says, look at that, it's dead ripe, and I don't have to waste the money spraying it. You know, you're looking at about $20 an acre to spray a field with either with a aerial or a high boy sprayer. It's about $20 an acre, and you know, you're running your costs. You could already be into an acre of land for $500 or $600, and you might only gross $750 or $800. So $20 an acre when you have you know, just 1,000 acres, that would be a small wheat farm. That makes a difference. So with wheat, it's going to be the exception to the rule when it's not desiccated, but that wheat's going to go into the food system and just get mixed with all the other wheat. Whereas specialty crops is what people call them, your chickpeas, garbanzos, all those things, much less likely. But again, if that farmer goes out in the fall and he's like, wow, it's raining, the crop isn't, you know, it's called greening. It just keeps greening. That's it. He'll call the local ag guy and get a sprayer in, whatever the crop is, as long as it's not Roundup ready. Now, even a Roundup ready crop can be desiccated, but they have to use a different herbicide. So
still a herbicide. All right, here's what I found. I asked the question. AI says, yes, hummus and other bean products can contain glyphosate, a weed killer linked to cancer. Then below that it says, glyphosate found in more than 80% of chickpea and hummus samples.
Wow.
So they're both apparently equally susceptible to being tagged as a glyphosate transporter, which is not good. Maybe that's why they took it out. I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe that's,
if you call, if you write them again, why are you taking chickpeas out? The same reason that you would take hummus out, perhaps, or garbanzo beans out. Tell them, just explain it to
them. The good news is the way mushrooms are grown, as we talked, they don't ripen like a crop. So I inspected a lot of mushroom operations. They're basically, whether they're organic or not, they're basically the same. There's very little difference. It's really rounding errors that would make the difference. So I would tell them, if they asked me, you don't need to make meaty into a 100% certified organic product here. You're not going to get a lot more bang for your buck if you go that way. But yeah, that would explain probably why they're getting rid of it. Jeff, I never would have guessed it's that high, what the percentage you quoted. It's like I was saying,
80, it seems 80%. Like, this comes from an AI overview. That's what they're putting in a lot of these Google-type answers now, AI overview. So rather than an individual writing the answer, they just go to AI.
Yeah.
That's probably reasonably accurate. AI has access to everything. So.
Yeah, I would say it's not surprising. I wouldn't have guessed that on the like chickpeas and garbanzos. But, yeah, any crop that can be, could be. And then they mix all the crops. So, I mean, now even if only half the farmers are spraying, it all gets mixed together at the processor. Actually, before it gets to the processor, it's at the elevator. So it's all mixed together. So it would be 100%, even if only half of them are doing the glyphosate desiccation at the end of the season.
Okay, let me ask you a semi-non-related question. There are a lot of toaster oven type products now. They call them. They have air fryer capabilities in them. They kind of have opposing side by side doors. You can open them up like a double door refrigerator. Some of them have one door that comes down at you like a tray opening. Do you know anything about those? I'm thinking about maybe getting one. I don't use an oven, but you can do anything in these, I'm told. Some of them are pretty good. Air frying is a good idea. That was the real question I wanted to pose. Yes?
Yeah. We got a pressure cooker / air fryer.
Uh-huh.
We went ahead and bought it. We bought a good one. Then we found out some of them have problems because there's Teflon inside of it.
Ah.
And luckily, the one we got, just blind luck, doesn't have that. So that's what you got to watch out for, because it's a sealed. You shouldn't use Teflon, as you know, Jeff, anywhere.
No. That's non-stick pans, okay, basically. Yeah. No matter what they call the Teflon-like ingredient, no. What is the brand name of yours? You mind sharing it?
I'll have to see. You know what? Hold on. I can check right here, because we checked and we found out it doesn't. And now,
does yours have double doors?
No. Now, it's a pressure cooker / air fryer. But you're... You can also get like a sort of an oven style air fryer, but this works as a pressure cooker.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah, and it's a Ninja, to answer your question, but I don't see a model. It just says Ninja on
it. That's fine.
That's all I wanted to know. And the problem is there's a heating element in it, like a coil, like on an old electric stove, and above that, some of the brands for some reason had Teflon or aluminum. And when that heats up, whatever food you have in there is going to pick up the particles. So anyway, this Ninja. Here we are, Jeff. We're promoting Meaty and Ninja, and we're not even getting paid for it. But yeah, we found out that one is safe. You want to make sure there's. I think it was Consumer Reports. My wife looked into it, and we found out this one is safe. That's what you want to watch out for.
Didn't know. That's there's always something to think about. You've got to keep your guard up all the time. Got to be aware.
Yeah, and the cheaper one. I mean, this thing's gonna sit on your counter for 10 years. So who cares if it's $250 as opposed to $150? The other thing we have is a bread maker, and the pan is it's Teflon. You cannot get a bread maker.
No.
But Jeff, it's such low heat. When you cook bread, it's not like baking pizza.
How many degrees?
Well, I don't know. You know, funny, but we did find out, like we did some reading up on it, because, see, our old bread maker died, so we were looking for a new one, and we were conscious of this issue. Found out basically two things. You can't find a bread maker that doesn't have a Teflon tin, but bread is such that the people in the know, like, I don't know if it was Consumer Reports or what, but yeah, they basically said for bread, it doesn't matter. Also, for rice, if you have a rice cooker, it's actually cooking, it's not boiling, it's simmering. So ideally, it would be like a ceramic, you know, but they don't make such a thing for bread or rice. So there you go. You're,
interesting. When you make your bread dough, do you have to cook it, bake it right away, or can you take a chunk off, bake a loaf, go back and get a couple more chunks in the next week or two, bake another loaf or two? How does it work, the dough?
Yeah, you can, if you're just making dough, you can make twice as much as would make a loaf of bread. And then you can take that dough out and cut it up for like making pizza shells, or like you say, you want to pre-make the dough for future loaves of bread and just have it ready to go. So yeah, the bread maker will make just dough, but we always just make a loaf of bread with it. And we always put rye in. That's your key ingredient to knowledge. No one is desiccating rye. Rye is the best of the grains. We don't eat enough of it. But just to be safe, we always buy certified organic rye, just in case. I can't imagine anyone's desiccating rye, but you never...
Rye. Never liked rye bread. I just... Maybe now that I'm older. I was a kid. I didn't like it. I was used to Wonder Bread.
Yeah. I was there, too. On the farm, we had... my baba would make homemade white bread, pure white, because the old Russians, that was considered a sign of that you had arrived. Your bread was white as snow, and you'd have a big thick, like 1-inch thick slice of that. And yeah, that's what I got used to too, is until I grew up and realized it's good to have a multi-grain and of course rye. Gotta have it.
Got it. All right, now we have Uncle Joe Stalin on the menu still, I believe.
Yes, that's our big one here. Yeah, right. So I heard you, this is a quote from you a couple months back. Trump is a completely different motif, or he's on a completely different, something to that effect. And he's people think, oh, he learned his lesson from his first term. And
no, nothing to do with that. No, it's all controlled. It's control. He's controlled.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, okay, great. They're cutting down on this, you know, USAID money, USAID going to foreign lands for condoms.
That was all CIA operative money for overthrows, for all kinds of corruption. It's awful. It's always been a CIA tool. So it's good to see it go. Make no mistake, it'll be replaced by something else, because they have to have that kind of asset out in the field to do things. But nonetheless, it's good headlines. It makes things look like they're going in the right direction. Go ahead.
And here's the tie-in to Stalin. In the lead-up to the outbreak of World War II, remember, Germany and the Soviet Union, they were at peace at first from 1939 till Hitler... did the surprise attack there in June of 1940.
No, let me help you with that real quick. Hitler prevented Europe from being overrun by the Soviet hordes, which were ready to invade Europe all the way to the English Channel. They had a million plus men, armaments, everything. The Germans went around behind them, surprised them, and basically captured the whole thing. It was within a week of being turned loose on Europe. So Germany saved Europe. Go ahead.
They literally did, Jeff. There's a good book called Icebreaker. A former Soviet guy. I forget if he was actually in the Red Army or if he worked for the KGB. But basically, the book is called Icebreaker. And it shows they were prepared. If you're in the military, you don't just have tanks. You have tanks, defensive and that different type of tank for offensive. And basically, all the armaments that Stalin was amassing that Hitler found out about, they were all offensive. So that when Hitler attacked, a lot of those weapons were basically useless.
They were facing forward. That's right. They weren't designed for rear guard action.
And the some days the Wehrmacht was advancing like 100 kilometers in one day, as fast as they could drive. You know, you're driving a 30-ton tank. It's not like a car. Car could go 100 kilometers in 1 hour. But to move an army and the armor and everything is just amazing. So there they go. Stalin is shocked. And word has it, he was hiding under his desk. Okay, but here's the parallel to Trump. Kind of like Justin Trudeau up in Canada. Justin Trudeau suddenly decided, you know, I wish I could drum up some patriotism in Canada because, you know, Trump wants to make Canada the 51st state. Well, good luck with that because Justin rang out all the patriots. There's no patriots left. But anyway, there's Stalin, and he realizes, whoa, this could really turn out bad. And this is really before the Allies, the Americans mainly, but also the Brits, started shipping massive amounts of armaments to the Soviets, and that's how they ultimately beat the Germans. But so he's really worried. Now, there had been this thing in the Soviet Union, just to set up the contrast, called the League of Militant Godless Society of the Godless. And also, Jeff, the Union of the Godless. And what was their motto? The storming of heaven. Like King no, it wasn't the Tower of Babel guy. That was Nimrod. Not, I had the wrong name there. Not Nebuchadnezzar. King Nimrod. Yeah, they were going to storm heaven. Gotcha. This is how the Soviet Union was being run, you know, right from 1917. And basically, Jeff, if you wanted to become a member of the Communist Party, you'd walk in and they'd say, oh, yeah, who are you? Yeah, we don't really know who you are yet. So go join the League of Militant Godless first. Okay, but then there we were, June of 1941. And as you correctly point out, Hitler caught wind of Stalin's plan. And so he launched Operation Barbarossa. And there's Stalin, as some historians say, hiding under his desk, and he doesn't know what to do. So what does he tell henchmen to do? He says, go out and find me some Orthodox Christian bishops, okay? Right. In the Orthodox Church, they don't go higher than bishop. That's it. There's no cardinals and there's no pope. And you know what? They couldn't find any. They'd all been killed. So they found some lower-level Orthodox priests that hadn't been liquidated. And Stalin brought them in to Moscow and made a deal with them. He said, look, I'll let you guys reopen your church. You can start ordaining people and baptizing infants again, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He says, but I need your help. And long story short, this is the parallel to Trump. A lot of people wouldn't dream that this ever happened, Jeff. But the Russian Orthodox Church declared Stalin, here's the quote, the divinely anointed leader of our armed and cultural forces, leading us to victory over the barbarian invasion. That was his title. If he had a business card, that all would have been on it. Now, and here's the source. The source is very important. It's from two professors at Illinois, University of Illinois, Robert Thurston and Bernd Bonwetsch. Sounds like Bonwetsch might be German. But in any case, their book is called The People's War, Responses to World War II, Soviet Union. That came out in 2000. So in historic terms, that's fairly recent. I would say this revelation has not sunk in yet, you know, into the mainstream or even the alternative sphere in which you and I work. Most people aren't aware that Stalin did this. And as soon as I heard you say those words, I've been very suspicious of everything Trump is doing. I mean, sure, it's good. He's going to cut off this funding to this insane stuff. But I really tend to think it's just for show. And like, again, to quote your words, Trump is on a completely different motif right now.
Motif, tack, whatever. He's been remade. This is the new Trump. He's been redesigned, relaunched, remarketed, and he is he's on a run right now. Unfortunately, he's still promoting genocide, mass murder of men, women, and children. With money, with deed, you cannot give the Israelis money to continue to slaughter and destroy humankind without being... You're going to have to carry some of that load. It's on you, literally. He's doing it. You can't do that. They're using American jets. American bombs, munitions, weapons, satellite data, tech from the Pentagon, whatever they want, they've got. Nobody even knows this. They have seven bases now that they've built and opened. Oh, they call them outposts. No, they're bases. And those are in Syria. Get it? They're taking control of Western Syria. We're paying for all of this. If you had to ask somebody, can you tell me how Israel makes all of its money so it can afford all of these wars? The person would say, no, they don't know. Nobody knows how Israel makes its money. It gets its money from us. We're their cash cow. That's how they get it. That's where they get it. Go ahead, please.
Totally. It's got to be like 75% of their revenue.
Oh, yeah.
How much tax would they be collecting from their own citizens? There's 9 million citizens. Netanyahu brags about all the branch offices like Google and all these tech companies have opened up branch offices in Tel Aviv and,
yes.
and such. But so what? That's just a drop in the bucket. Those tech companies do that to sort of show fealty to the state of Israel and its leaders.
I think that's right. I think you're right.
I don't think there's any there. We've discussed before, the state of Israel import. They always talk about, we turned the desert green. You know, these stupid Arabs, they didn't know how to farm. Oh, God. No, they import 85% of their wheat. And wheat is, of course, for bread and muffins and such. It's also the feed for your dairy and poultry and everything. And they don't have any pork over there, of course.
Right.
But yeah, you don't have meat if you don't have grain. And they're importing 85% of it. So don't tell me they turned the desert green. Another interesting thing, you know, John Steinbeck, the author of Grapes of Wrath, was his grandfather in the late 19th century, about 1880, 1890. He was part of a group that started bringing Jews to the Holy Land. And these were deluded Christians who actually think, first of all, Jeff, that these Jews from Poland are Israelites. And second of all, that God gave them the land. Whereas if you look into like the Haredi Jews, they're the real Jews. And they say, no, we're not supposed to go to the Holy Land until after the Messiah comes. That's the Haredi Jews. They also go by the name of Neturakarta. And you'll see them, they're in Jerusalem, and a lot of Christian Zionists say, well, why are these self-hating Jews living in Jerusalem? If they don't think the state of Israel should be there, they should leave. No. That was the deal. When they created the state of Israel in 1948, Jerusalem was supposed to remain neutral. And, of course, we've gone in, and Trump moved the embassy there. But, yeah, those are the real Jews. They live in Jerusalem. Some of them, a lot of them are here in
That's
Texas.
Right. And they can trace back to biblical times. The others are Khazars. They adopted the Jewish religion in the 600s. They're not real. They don't trace their lineage all the way back. They're Khazarians.
Yeah. So John Steinbeck's granddad started that, and they're German. They were German of German extraction. I think they're Jewish as well. But but John Steinbeck's granddad was what you call a Messianic Jew. He was a Christian, even though he had Jewish ethnicity. So it gets kind of complicated. But yeah, they were the first to start bringing Jews from Europe. And then, as you know, Jeff, I know you know about the transfer agreement in the 1930s, also called the Havara Agreement. That's when the rubber really hit the road, and Germany starts bringing, instead of a few thousand Jews, you know, over decades from the late 19th century through the World War One period. It really picked up when the Ottoman Empire finally fell after World War One, but it didn't pick up as much as until Hitler came to power and signed the Havara Agreement, also known as the Transfer Agreement, and then they started bringing tens of thousands of Jews from Europe to Palestine.
That's
and
correct.
Yeah, isn't that ironic that those mean old Germans, there they were, they're the ones, through misguided understanding of the Bible, they thought these were the Jews of the Bible, these are the Israelites, let's help them, and God will smile. Oh boy, God didn't smile on them for what they did. They the Jews stabbed them in the back, as you know. And anyway,
that's all true.
That's those. Oh, Jeff. And then one more thing, those Jews, they were brought in and given farm equipment and land. The land was purchased for them through this thing that John Steinbeck's grandfather set up through this fund. And by the way, that's what the czars tried doing, giving land to the Jews and giving them the equipment to farm it. Well, most of the Jews, they would show up and take possession. They'd, as Dr. E. Michael Jones says, they would sell the equipment and rent the land out. Most of them, even when you read sympathetic accounts of this, most of them wound up living in the city.
Yeah.
They never farmed. Not one day in their life.
No.
They never turned the desert green.
No, sir. No, they don't. Oh. They don't put themselves out there to sweat in the sun. They just never have. Misha, thank you. That was really a terrific, again, tour of all kinds of information. And very important that you pay attention to the glyphosate aspect. Now that we know for sure it is up to 80% in chickpeas and garbanzos and other kinds of beans as well. And you don't want that. And you have a right to contact the manufacturer and ask them to track it down. All right, my friend. We'll talk to you next month. Be safe. Be careful out there.
Will do, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
Okay, Misha. Great program. Thank you. Misha Popoff. And he is one of the rare ones out there. He knows both sides of the track, and he is standing on the right side, and he's not afraid at all. Okay, back with you tomorrow, Friday. Thanks for being here. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk soon.